Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Games studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. D-Mace, Willie D, happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Love Day.
How we doing?
Hey, doing well. Doing well.
Happy Valentine's Day, guys.
Happy Valentine's Day. Nick Keyser behind the glass. How we doing today, Nick?
Doing well. Can't complain.
Well, you know, there's a lot to love about today, but there's a whole lot to not love about today as well.
This is how they trick us into buying extra stuff.
And I'm here for it. Hey, I'll eat chocolate any day of the year, but if you designate one particular day for flowers and chocolate, two of my favorite things. But a pretty rough one for the Predators last night. Ooh. And it was a game they absolutely positively needed to win. Said it yesterday, you know, this is a bad team. They're easy gimme points with a rough schedule coming up ahead. You got the Boston Bruins who are lighting it up. You got them coming up on Thursday. You got to get the points where you can get them. And even without Philip Forsberg, even with Kevin Lankin in net, that's a game that you needed to win, and it's a game that they didn't win. And so now they're looking at three games removed from the break, a really rough clunker against the Vegas Golden Knights, go on the road at Philadelphia, you get a win in overtime, and then you host the Arizona Coyotes, one of the worst teams in the league, who is actively tanking and actively trying to lose, and you drop that game as well. Since the break, it has not looked good for the Nashville Predators.
Willie, I wanted to ask you this, and it just seems like this team, you don't know what to make of them. You know, I'm thinking, well, losing Philip Forsberg, that's huge. But you're also playing a team that is not good.
Just not good. Like, they're awful.
Yeah, they're awful. But I'm not going to go as far as to say, oh, they're tanking, because to me, the players will never put themselves in a position where they're not playing 100%. Now, management may think that way, and I don't even think coaches think that way, but management may be thinking that way, but you can't ask a player, oh, tank, because if you ask a player to tank, he don't want to play for you no more, period. So they are a bad team, but tanking, I can't go that far. But you got to beat a team like that. You have to. This team, the way they played in Philly, even though it went into overtime, they played a gritty game. They played a game for three periods into overtime and was able to score an overtime goal quickly because they were the better team. I don't know what happened last night. It just seemed like this team – it seems like this team sometimes plays as if they are atop the conference, that they can, you know, give a game away and rest this game and pick it back up. You can't do that when you are sitting outside the playoffs right now.
No question. You got to – that loss hurts, no doubt. And there's a lot of layers to a game like that. And in the context of where they are in the season, that's why it really hurts. You know, I could sit here and say – a lot of things. Like, Arizona's been playing well for them, right? They're tanking, but they have some guys that are playing some really good hockey. They have a goalie that has been stealing games. If you look at how they've played in the last 10 or 11 games, it's been some of the best hockey they've played all year long. But, and in the big picture, teams that are tanking are still going to win about one of every four games, right? There are upsets. I can use examples. Columbus just won at Toronto the other day. So, like, the Blackhawks are playing pretty well for them.
But Arizona hasn't won a road game since November.
I know.
18 in a row.
So, that's right. So, the law of averages says they're going to win every now and then. Now, all that being said, right, I don't want to sit here and make excuses for them because they needed to win that game. You could slough off a loss like that if you're in better position, right? If you're sitting there comfortably in the playoffs, if you look at the stats last night, and that's what I try to do, I try to be objective, what happened in the game. The Predators outshot the Coyotes. They had almost a 2-1 edge in scoring chances. So they did the things that you're supposed to do to win a hockey game, but they didn't win. And again, you could live with that a lot easier if you were in a comfortable position. But where they are, they just can't afford to have that happen. And that's what happened. So that's one that really stings and keeps you up at night. And because the thing that I just was frustrated with, I thought they were badly outplaying the Coyotes, as they should have been, through two periods, but the game was tied. I was a little disappointed in the third period that I didn't see a little bit more desperation and, you know, willing yourself. We have to win this game. We're going to make it happen, right? Forget about what the stats show. This is about results. We've got to have this game. And they didn't quite have it. And, yeah, they're playing without Philip Forsberg, playing without Alex Carrier, and they gave the night off to UC Saros. All those things were factors for sure, but you still should have enough to be able to beat the Coyotes. And so, once again, for where it falls in the season, that's why it looks so – I mean, it's so amazing how one loss like that can have you really sinking back and saying, what is going on? Whereas after Saturday, you're thinking, okay, got the job done, need to win this game. Had they won last night, both Calgary and Minnesota lost in overtime, you would have gained points on both of them, and you'd be feeling pretty good about yourself today. But it just shows you how it swings on one loss like that. So it's extremely frustrating.
When every game matters.
Yeah, because you don't have the margin for error at this point. Like, if you had margin for error, you'd be like, okay, whatever. You know, right. Rough night, unlucky, Saros didn't play, we don't have Forsberg. You could be able to wash it away a lot easier. But where they sit right now, it stings doubly or triply because of where they sit. They just don't have, you know, they're on the edge of the cliff, right? They don't have room to have fallbacks. Right, they have to stay consistent for the last, and there's still a ton of games. There's 31 games left, but these are the points where at the end, if you come up a little bit short, you look back on games like this.
Right, and it's not just about the one game. And let's just look at the window between the break and the trade deadline and those 11 games. It's not just the one game. It's combined with the bad, slow offensive game against Vegas and then this loss against Arizona. And it's those losses combined with the fact that there needed to be a sense of urgency. The fact that we are in a period where every single game is so important. From now until the trade deadline, from now until the end of the season, where every single point matters. And I didn't feel that sense of urgency from this team last night, at least not through three periods. And I don't know how this team can be sitting in a spot where they're sitting on the outside looking in of the playoffs and not be playing a full three periods, to not be playing a full complete game, to not feel that sense of urgency that I didn't see, where they just looked kind of sluggish and lethargic. Where's the fire? Where your hopes for the playoffs still could be alive, but I didn't see it last night. That's the frustrating thing, is wake up, come on.
Well, again, I go back to the stat sheet, and I'm not trying to be Mr. Fix It, Mr. Excuse, but they, you know, face-off, 69% Nashville, 31%. Shot attempts, 2-1 edge. Scoring chances, 2-1 edge. 5 power play opportunities to 1. So it's not like they just took the night off, right? What they didn't do was convert. And that's what that is really what it says about the team. What is the biggest weakness of this team? Is they've got 5 total goals in the 3 games since the All-Star break. And so when they struggle, it's because they're not scoring. They're not converting and making plays, and it's got to be the top players that do it, and they were missing their best finisher in Forsberg, so that's why they came up short. I don't think it was an effort thing. I did, like I said, though, if I'm going to nitpick, I didn't see the desperation in the third period, especially when they fell behind. It was kind of a fluky thing that they gave up 3 goals. They didn't give up very much. They played a good, solid defensive game, and Arizona was opportunistic. They had a guy, Lawson Crouse, had 2 great shots, 2 goals. They didn't get a ton of chances, but they were where they were, and I was hoping to see kind of this, look, we can't lose this game. We've got to find a way. We're going to break down the story. We've got to make it happen. And that was probably the most disappointing about that. But statistically, they did a lot of the right things. They set themselves up. But again, that conversion rate, that playmaking ability, that's where this team has got the biggest issue. And I think for David Poile, I think that's what you got to be realistic about is, look, we've had this discussion many times. When the top players are playing well, everything looks right. You got the goalie. You got the defensive structure. I think the herd that's been put back together last night, I thought they played with a lot of heart A lot of passion. They were hitting people. They had 34 hits. Tanner Janot had 5 hits. You know, they got the goal. They got him ahead in the game. I thought at that moment, here they are taking control of the game. They're up 2-1, and I thought they might be fine. You know, I thought that they dominated the second period as a whole. They gave up one shot, and it was a goal. And all of a sudden, it's tied at the end of the second period. So once again, if you took that in a vacuum during a season where everything's going pretty well, you just kind of you'd be fine with this. But it's where it falls in the season and when, it stings like double or triple.
Right. And I totally hear you. But at this point in the season, with the sense of urgency that this team has, the stats don't really mean anything to me. The hits or the shots, those don't really mean anything to me. Because you can look at, you know, Jalen Hurts threw for almost double the yards that Patrick Mahomes threw for in the Super Bowl. But you don't get a trophy for that. You know, you're not the MVP of the Super Bowl because you threw for more yards. At this point, the only thing that matters to me, and maybe that's not fair, but the only thing that matters to me is winning games. If this team wants to be a playoff team, which I know is the expectation for this team, it's what David Poyle said at the end of last season. It's what David Poyle reiterated in his sit down with the Tennessean when he spoke with Robbie and Rexroad this morning. It's making the playoffs is the priority for this team. So the shots on goal or the hits or the stats, those don't mean anything to me anymore. And I don't know if it really means anything to the fans anymore. Right now, the only thing that matters is winning games and picking up points where you can get them. And they didn't do that last night against a team that really, frankly, they're better than. They should be better than. They should beat. Because every team has been beating them on the road since November.
Yep. They have to be better than the Coyotes. No doubt about it. So I can't disagree. I mean, if it's about results. They have to win the games. And so now, like I've been saying consistently, the next marker is at the trade deadline. And I know David Poyle had some things to say about that this morning. And so where they are in 9 games, you know, this team has to do well in those 9 games, or else you got to be realistic, right? And so that's the next time where you really have a chance to take a look and see where you are.
And that's what David Poyle mentioned this morning on Robbie and Rexroad, and that's what I want to get into coming up next. Because Elliot Friedman said, hey, David Poyle, let the players tell you what to do at the trade deadline. So what have the players told David Poyle now three games after the break? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025, 1025, 1063, the game.
I think you've got to let this play. I think you've got to let this play out. I think you have to let your team, like, you've got a month now before the trade deadline. The trade deadline is a month tomorrow. I think what you do is you let your players decide for you. You see how the next month goes, and then you start to see, you know, what is the interest level on some of your players? How do you want to reshape your roster? You know, I know Ekholm's name has been out there. You know, there's not a lot of teams right now. He's a good player. I know that I think the thing is there's a lot of teams that can't handle that contract right now. I think what you're doing is you're deciding who's a predator long term. When we get better, who's part of this roster? And anyone who isn't that, I think you're looking out there and seeing what the market is for them.
There you go. That was Elliot Friedman. Said, hey, David Poyle, let your players tell you what you do at the trade deadline. So what has this team showed David Poyle through 3 games between the break and the trade deadline? Well, David Poyle was on Robbie and Rexford this morning and expressed where he is right now through 3 games. You know, a loss against the Golden Knights 5-1, where offense was tough to come by, an overtime win against the Flyers, and then, of course, a loss last night against the Arizona Coyotes. A couple brutal games mixed in there. So what has this team showed David Poyle so far? This was David Poyle this morning.
Deadline getting closer here, David. I guess would you have to be in a much worse position mathematically by that day or by that direct time period to seriously consider selling?
That's what keeps me up at night. You know, right now we're still below the line, not in the playoffs. We're running out of time. Just like this interview, I've been talking about inconsistency and people need to play better, but that hasn't happened on a regular basis. So I do not think we're a buyer. Let's start with that. And I think if things don't, you know, change more favorably and get in some kind of winning streak, we are certainly could be a seller. But That's not today.
Hmm.
Okay, so per David Poyle, not buyers, sellers possibly. We'll see through the next few games.
That's a shot across the whole team. Like, everybody is on notice. That's what that was. Listen, I'm not buying. I'm done with buying. I'm selling.
We're not pushing.
I'm not going to sit here. If y'all don't take the initiative and do what needs to be done as a ball club to show up every game and to be consistent every game, because it's not like they don't have the players to be consistent. They do. But to be consistent every game, I am not going to sit here and continue to, you know, put my reputation on the line as one of the best GMs when y'all are not trying to get the job done. So I'm done with buying and trying to put this team together. I'm selling. And if y'all can't get that, if they didn't hear that and think as a team, we need to get our crap back on track. If they didn't hear that and think that all of us are expendable, something's wrong with that team. Because he's basically told you, I am not buying. I'm selling if this thing doesn't, if it doesn't turn around. So if you walk into any room and the GM says, basically, hey, listen, y'all, if we don't get this straight, I'm done with trying to put this team. I'm selling. And walk out the room. If y'all don't take that as a let's get it going, then something's wrong with y'all. Seriously.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think if you want to look at David Poyle over the years, he's always been pretty even keeled in assessing, you know, where the team is. And I've heard him say that exact same quote many times over the years. I mean, since he's been the only GM we've ever known in this town, right? And so he's seen teams that are right in this spot on the bubble. And, you know, this particular team, as you guys have said, they are built to make the playoffs. It was going to be hard to buy from day one. Once they signed Niederreiter and McDonough, those were the buys in the offseason to bring the salary cap up, add a couple of veterans to the mix, and try to be better than they were last year. And so here they are. They're below expectations, and there's so little margin for error. You're coming off a really painful loss on one you're sitting there going, this is one you got to have, right? So what you hit on, Derek, is what I think I want to see. I want to see desperation between now and March the 4th. I don't think Ryan McDonough agreed to a trade here to come in and be part of a team that doesn't make the playoffs and is kind of retooling, right? I don't think Nino Niederreiter signed here to be a part of a team that, you know, maybe we make the playoffs, maybe we don't.
And this team didn't make those moves with Niederreiter and McDonough just to miss the playoffs. Those were pushes.
100%. And that's why it was disappointing for me in the third period. Right, I thought they were doing the right things. Statistically, they had the advantage, but once they fell behind, I wanted to see it go up another notch. You know, as you said, Arizona, if they walk out of here with a loss, you know, no big deal. Mm-hmm. The young players are looking good. We got some guys that are part of the future. I like where it's going. You know, it's not everything on the line whether they win or lose, right? And that's where I didn't see. I thought Arizona closed the game out too easily. Right, for my liking. So that's what I want to see come back. Now, you could play your best game of the year against Boston and lose. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
Right? So looking at where they have between now and the trade deadline, you know, as a player, you can only get ready for the next game, right? So that this game against Boston is enormous, right? And every game is from here. But you've got 9 games left. And I think that was the shot across the bow, as you said, Derek. It's like, where are you going to be on you know, the day before the trade? Decisions have to be made by then. If you slip back another notch or two, then he has no choice but to look around and see, can you better the team for the long run? I mean, that's what any GM has got to do in those shoes, right? That some teams have already come to that conclusion. You know, the Blues last week, about a week or two before that, Vancouver got to that point. You know, hey, look, it's just probably not going to happen for this group. We got to start looking down the road and not at the next couple of months. And so Nashville is on the brink of that. There's no question about it.
Right. And And so what David Boyle said, it makes absolutely zero sense to buy. You know, if you want to re-sign some of your free agents, you're going to be up against the salary cap. You're on the outside looking into the playoffs. It makes no sense whatsoever to buy. And it'd be easy to say, okay, well, if we don't go on a winning streak, and if we don't win enough games from now until the trade deadline and the next, what is it, 8 games remaining, then it'd be really easy to say, okay, yeah, we're going to sell. That's so much easier said than done, though, because now I look at where this team is constructed. How many assets do you have that are that attractive for somebody to buy what you're selling? Who's picking up Matt Duchene's contract?
Nobody.
Nobody. Ryan Johansson's contract?
Nobody.
Nobody. You just signed Philip Forsberg. I don't think that's a contract that anybody else would want to absorb, nor do I think that the Predators are interested in dealing Philip Forsberg's contract. So it could be really easy to say, okay, let's sell. Let's pick up some assets. Let's build for the future, because this year it ain't happening. Well, what are you going to sell? That's kind of where I am the catch-22 that I find the Predators in, almost stuck with some of these contracts that right now it's not good enough, but how are you going to be good enough in the future when you cannot continue to sell off your assets to build for the future?
And that's the dilemma that I think a lot of teams are finding themselves in. I think there's some teams that would like to add but don't have much room to add much, right? And then there's teams that would like to trade off some players, maybe free up some some salary cap space in a perfect world, but they can't find any takers for some of these guys. So this has been a problem, I think, the last couple years, and with the cap likely not going up, that does restrict what you want to do, which I do think is part of the thinking. It has to be part of the thinking. I think you look around, you're always, just like we were talking about, should the Titans call the Bears about the first pick? Absolutely, totally, yes, you should call. So if you're David Poyle, you should assess the trade market behind the scenes and find out what everybody's thinking, right? That's your job, is to assess the market and then weigh your options when the time comes. I do think you sort of take it. Now, if, you know, you lose 4 in a row, I think the picture becomes pretty clear, right? That's what happened with the Blues. The Blues beat the Predators in that debacle in St. Louis.
Whew.
And then they lost the next 5 games. And so that was pretty much in it. And then they sold Tarasenko, which, you know, was sort of brewing for a couple years. You know, he had asked for a trade. It was kind of, you know, a weird situation anyway. And so they went ahead and made the move. Now the next thing they've got to decide is Kyle O'Reilly. Now O'Reilly, not Kyle O'Reilly, that's Ryan. His brother, used to play for the Predators, Ryan O'Reilly, their captain, right, who they have a ton of respect for. But he's a free agent at the end of the year, so he's a little bit easier to move as a rental as opposed to some of these guys you just mentioned for the Predators who have term left. Mm-hmm. They don't have a rental for another team to pick up just to the end of the season, right? So that's what makes it a little more complicated, but I think there would be a guy or two out there. You know, you heard Elliot mention Ekholm. His name comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Now, he's got a couple years left on his contract, but he's so good, I would imagine there'd be some teams that would try to figure out, you know, finagle ways to at least try to make an offer. That's happening with a lot of players around the league. Like Erik Karlsson is the ultimate, right? He makes $11 million a year. He's making way more than he should make, but he, you know, he's got one of the huge contracts, but he's having a great year. But it would be very difficult for a contending team, to fit him under their salary cap. So it's complicated.
It is complicated. And you also have to look at it, like we were discussing with the Titans yesterday, about, you know, moving wide receivers. And this team is not a veteran wide receiver that you're going to pay $13, $14, $15 million away from being able to compete with the Kansas Cities and the Cincinnati's and the Buffaloes of the AFC. You got to make big moves. And it might hurt if it doesn't work. But if it pays off, then you could start to compete. I also look at it with this team is I understand Ekholm is a great player and he is a core player on this team, but is this team a trading Matthias Ekholm away from being able to retool for the future and be competitive in the future? I don't know if the return is going to be good enough on dealing an Ekholm in order to retool for the future. And I don't know what other moves are out there to be able to, you know, those blockbuster moves that it's like, okay, like the St. Louis Blues, they're trading Vladimir Tarasenko and they are building for the future. I think the only move that you have and the greatest asset that this team has is trading away UC Saros. And that probably feels really uncomfortable and probably doesn't seem like a very attractive move at this point, especially considering UC Saros is one of the best goaltenders in the world and has been carrying this team throughout so many games. But if this team gets to the point from now until the trade deadline, they're like, look, we are not a competitor. We are not going to make the playoffs, and we don't see a bright future as for this team as currently constructed. I think that's a move you have to entertain, as uncomfortable as it would be. That is your greatest movable asset at this point.
No, I don't think you could touch that. That's one. I understand what you're saying, Caroline, but that's like trading A.J. Brown. It's like, damn, you did it. And then you start to see how much, and then he goes somewhere else and continues to play great, and you still looking for that guy. You can't do it. As much as probably that's the only, you know, asset that you have that is movable, that you would get a lot back or whatnot, but you can't make that move. That's a move that's saying, you know what, damn the season. Damn next season, really. This is a rebuild, period. That move, that's like trading a quarterback. You do that, it better work. It better work because everybody in that
building. You would have to be blown away with the package that you would be offered to consider that. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of with you, Derek. And see, this is the catch-22. And I understand why the question comes up, because there's no doubt there are some teams that would drool if they could bring in UC Saros, right? We've talked about some of the teams that are looking around. They've got a lot of pieces, LA, but they're missing the goalie.
Right.
And the Predators have a fantastic goalie prospect in Askarov, who is down in Milwaukee. He's an all-star. He's doing push-ups on the goal. He's got a lot of flair, but he's so young. He's a ways away from really being able to help you on an every-night basis. So you would have to be prepared to take some major steps back. And like you said, Caroline, here's the problem. You're still going to be stuck with a lot of these contracts that have another year or two before you really, you know, are going to see a chance to turn the roster over a lot. And then the cap will go up. The other thing that certainly has to be considered in here is you have a very good farm system. You've got some guys. Like I was talking to some people, next year, let's presume that Tomasino is on the team next year. And that's a big thing going forward. Mm-hmm. How does he play? He looked okay last night. I mean, it would have been great if he could have given them a spark, scored a goal. But he's going to get a chance here. Hopefully he can stick. And now he's up permanently. He's going to be a part of the team. Next year, even without him, you're probably going to have about 5 first-round picks playing in Milwaukee. So that's a good thing. But how many of those guys could help the team next year? Like, you still got to be patient with a lot of these guys who are like 20, 19 years old, 18 years old in the case of Joachim Kemmel, right? He looks really good, but he's a couple years away from being able to help you. So the help coming from Milwaukee is going to get there, but it's not going to get there anytime soon.
But if you don't make those changes, you're going to be stuck where you've been. And I don't think that the Predators want to be stuck where they've been, of a fringe playoff team getting into the playoffs, getting knocked out in the first round. But let's continue this conversation coming up next about another change that this team could potentially make. And, of course, your thoughts, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game in the Game Nashville app. Hey, if you screwed up Valentine's Day, it's not too late. 1025 The Game and Green Trees Company have your chance to make it up. Tune in this Friday to the Chase and Michelle Show for your last chance to win tickets to see Adam Sandler at Bridgestone Arena, courtesy of Green Trees Company in Hendersonville. Talking about where the Predators go next. And, you know, the trade deadline is upcoming, and it could be really easy to say if the Preds lose a considerable amount of the games, the 8 games remaining from now until the trade deadline, sell it off, get picks for the future, get assets for the future. Okay, well, what are you going to sell? Matt Duchene, because no one's picking up that contract. Ryan Johansson, no one's touching that contract. You just signed Philip Forsberg. You're not trading that contract. I say your most valuable, movable asset at this time is UC Saros. And I know that's probably a very uncomfortable move to make, but right now, UC Saros is as valuable as he has ever been. There are teams bending over backwards, probably, that would take UC Saros in a heartbeat, and they would be willing to trade you whatever it would take to get UC Saros. So although it feels like a really uncomfortable move, I think those are the moves that the Predators have to make. If you don't make those moves, then you just stay where you are. You're stagnant. So you might have to make some of those uncomfortable moves. But if you don't make them, then you just continue to stay where you are, a fringe playoff team. And I don't think anybody wants that for the Predators, to just be where they have been, middle of the pack, average.
Well, we've had the conversation about average. I don't think what they've done has been average, because there's a lot of teams that haven't made the playoffs a lot. But I get your point. And to me, if Saros was a little – like, I feel like in 2 years, when his contract is coming up and Askarov is a couple of years older, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the decision. I'll give you an example of a couple years ago. Tampa Bay had Ben Bishop, who got them to the Stanley Cup final in 2015. Big, huge veteran goalie, won a lot of games. They also had a kid named Andrei Vasilevskiy, who was in his low 20s, and he was obviously noticeable and a great player. Eventually, they moved Ben Bishop to clear the way for Vasilevskiy. That might happen, but Saros at 27 right now, with 2 years left on his deal, I still think Askarov is not ready to jump in there. If he were ready to jump in, then I might feel a little bit more, okay, let's take a look at these options. I don't think that they're there right now. So we're getting ahead of ourselves, right? Because we have to really look at this after eight games. Like, I think you can't panic, right? That, as bad as that was last night, in these next eight games, you go 5-3, 6-2. You look at it, like, you got a head-to-head with Minnesota, one of the teams that you got to catch. Mm-hmm. You've played well against Minnesota. I'm just being glass half full, as I'm known to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got two games with Florida. I think those will tell you a lot. Florida is in the same situation, mm-hmm. a bubble team Fringe. That needs to win. You've got San Jose. You've got another game against Arizona. You got Vancouver, a team that is out of it. Like, you could win some games here if you get your act together. Now, we don't know how long Forsberg's going to be out. That's going to be a factor here. There's no timetable there. I'm pretty sure he's not likely to be in there against Boston, and I would imagine it's, you know, I you know, just looking at what happened there, you know, I can't expect him back this week. So these are all the things that you have to consider. But to move a guy like Saros, like you said, that's a quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's the most that's your ace pitcher. You go for decades without finding guys like that. We've almost been spoiled here to have Thomas Fokun, Pekka Rinne, Juuse Saros. Like, we haven't seen a team play with bad goaltending really since the team came into life here. I don't want to go down that road, mm-hmm. right? So I think he is your baseline guy. You would have to be completely blown away, and I just don't know what that would be like. But look, you got to make the calls. The calls will come to you, right? Teams looking for goalies, they'll call you. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to call them. So if you get blown away from an offer, hey, you got to look at it. I just think it's very doubtful at this point, and we still have eight games before you really have to make that decision.
But wouldn't they, because considering the hard salary cap, it's almost, you know, could you even trade him? You know, because it's not like he's making, you know, top tier money.
Yeah.
Could you
trade him? He makes $5 million. He's one of the best bang for your buck goalies in the game.
So
right
you
now,
can't
I think.
Bring back too much unless it's picks, unless it's, you know,
yeah.
draft
it would be probably prospects who are, mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be prospects that
prospects
have developed prospects. Mm-hmm. Because picks, remember what picks are in the NHL?
Potential.
It's potential, and it's also how high is the pick? Like, Tarasenko just got traded from the Blues to the Rangers. The Rangers have two first-round picks. One of them goes to St. Louis, but it's the lower of the two. They have Dallas's first-round pick. So Dallas and the Rangers are both going to have low first-round picks. So that's not going to get you the franchise player, right? And whoever the first-round pick is going to be just turning 18 years old, and it's a little bit hit or miss who's going to be impact. It's not like football where you have a little bit more of a projection of what a guy is going to be. So, you know, you if you were to even consider it, it's got to be a can't-miss mm-hmm. package coming back. It's got to be high-level prospects. And so I think it's complicated, right? Mm-hmm. But from the salary cap in, mm-hmm. bringing in a goalie as good as Saros who makes only $5 million, that can be done, right? There will be teams that are like, we can get him in there for $5 million.
Oh,
no
absolutely.
Question about it. But
absolutely.
What are you willing to give? And it so, like I keep saying, you got to just completely knock my socks off for me to even consider this, because the hardest thing to find, I think, is probably the franchise goalie.
And they may have the next one coming up in Askarov.
And we don't know. That's the thing. I mean,
so if,
I mean, he looks good, but it's a while. Goalies, there's a lot of roads for a goalie. So, and usually you don't really know what you have until the guy's closer to 24, 25. It's the exception. Like Connor McDavid, we knew when he was 18, mm-hmm. was a franchise mm-hmm. guy. Goalies can look really good at 20. And Askarov, the talent is never going to be questioned, right? He's got the athleticism. He's got all that. But the nuances, the technical skills, you know, it's like a pitcher that throws 100 miles an hour. He's not guaranteed to get you out just because he throws 100 miles an hour. There's all the pitch making, all of the mental stuff, the precision. That takes time to develop. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to know that Askarov is a can't miss right now. His ceiling is off the charts, but he's got a long way to go to develop.
And so if you wouldn't be willing to move Saros, there are changes that you can make. And this is if the Predators do decide to sell at the trade deadline. And per David Poile this morning, it's on the table. It's not for certain, but it absolutely is on the table. Let the next 8 games decide it for you. Your options, you can trade Nino Niederreiter. You can trade Yakov Trenin. You can trade Dante Fabbroe. But just as I don't think that any of those three players are franchise-altering players, trading them away I don't think completely changes your franchise either.
No.
And so at that point, you're kind of treading water.
Like Saros is a fourth-round pick, mm-hmm. right? Uh-huh. So every third or fourth-round pick, every extra draft pick you get is a chance, albeit a small chance, but the more darts you have to throw at the board, the more of a chance you have. Like Saros is a pick that was acquired. This is interesting.
Right.
So the Predators traded their first round pick mm-hmm. when they were trying to add, and they picked up a guy named Paul Gostad, a good solid big center that they got for the stretch run, and they won some playoff rounds with Paul Gostad. They traded their first round pick, but they also got a fourth back. So it was the first round pick to Buffalo for Gostad and a fourth, and the fourth turned out to be UC Saros. So you don't know. I mean, that was years before we ever heard of UC Saros. Like, where'd they get Saros? Oh, he's a fourth round pick? Oh, that was Buffalo's pick. That was the Paul Gostad trade. So you just never know, you know, what extra pick is going to get you. So some of these moves you're saying that might be easier to make if you're out of it at the trade deadline. It's like, well, they traded so-and-so for a fourth-round pick. Well, what's the big deal? Well, you know, extra fourths, you know, you package picks to get something else. The more assets you have, the better your chances are of finding something good down the road.
And it would not be a comfortable move, but sometimes mm-hmm. you might get to a certain point where you're at a crossroads. We can do something uncomfortable and hope it pays off, and if it doesn't, someone's probably going to lose their job. And if it does work, well, then you just made a monumental move that you'll look back on the franchise and say, that is what got us to a Stanley Cup. That's what made us competitive. And those comfortable moves aren't necessarily what pushes you over the edge. Like the A.J. Brown trade. Mm-hmm. It was not a comfortable move. And it didn't pay off, and somebody paid for it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I see your phones lining up. We are right into your Preds thoughts coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Just as another skilled player who might be able to help you guys manufacture a little bit more offense?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason that shouldn't happen. I mean, he's going to control his own destiny. That's exactly what we would like to see happen. And I'm just repeating myself. He's going to get the opportunities here in these next games where Phil is not in the lineup. And let's hope that he can make a difference. I mean, we need somebody. We need something to boost us up a little bit. And he's got as good a chance as anyone to do that.
There you go. That was David Poile this morning on Philip Tomasino. We got an opportunity. Philip Forsberg out. Philip Tomasino in. And hey, it didn't blow me away last night, but it was fine.
Yeah, it's one of those where you're hoping for the story, right? That Tomasino comes in, scores one, kind of says, I'm
here.
The
crowd goes wild.
I'm here. The crowd's like, yeah, we've been waiting for this guy. I told you to bring him up earlier. I've been talking to Willie about this. I've been telling him, get him in there. You know, but, he was okay. I saw the speed. And you know what? Now you get to play the Bruins, right? Probably one of they're the best.
Yeah.
They are the best team all around. And it all starts with they're very difficult to score against. So this is an uphill task. You're going to have UC Soros rested, ready to go for that game, but you got to figure out a way to beat the best team in hockey coming off of this one. So a major, major test. And so that's the concerning thing. We're looking at eight games between now and the deadline. Mm-hmm. After Boston, it's not a bunch of heavyweights. It's a pretty busy schedule. There are games you can win in there. But what I've been kind of thinking in the back of my mind, and you guys tell me, like if you're David Poile, and you know you may not have Forsberg for, you know, I don't know. Like there is no timetable on Forsberg, right? You might have to play these next eight games without Forsberg, worst case, right? But you might have to play at least the next three, four without him.
Uh-huh.
But how many points out do I need to be to really make an assessment one or the other? The easy one is, you know, you go 0-8, the decision's easy, right?
Right.
You go 8-0, decision's easy. You're in. You're standing pat. Let's go try to make the playoffs. But what is the breaking point, right? And because you wonder if they're still sitting where they are today, 4 or 5 points out, couple of games in hand. They've played a couple of games less than Minnesota. They played 3 games less than Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
So the old saying, the games in hand are great, but you got to win the games. It's not an assumption that you win those games, right? But you have the ability to control your own destiny to still be right with those teams. And you got to pass them both, right? You can't just pass one and be fine. Now, is there another team out there in the West that could come crashing down? That's always a possibility.
Yeah.
So to me, you ask yourself, what does it need to be for me to say, I'm going to keep my cards on the table and I'm going to play my hand as is, or I'm going to fold, right? I'm going to see if I can improve the team for the future. What would you guys do in his shoes?
I mean, right now, I mean, what, they are 9 points out?
Well, they're 5 out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, five.
Five points behind. So okay. That's 2 wins and an overtime loss, okay. But they've played less games than the teams that they have to catch. So,
when do they get a point? It will be after the trade deadline where they sort of catch up in games, right?
Yes. It gets very busy in March.
Yeah.
So,
which is good and bad, right? You have to.
It's good from the standpoint of, okay, at least we have that moving forward. But it's bad because if you don't do what you need to do before the trade deadline, then you got to make a decision. It's almost like you're rolling the dice in a sense. Do I not do anything because we got these games in hand and the trade deadline is coming up? Or do I do something before the trade deadline just in case we don't? That's the dilemma that he's in.
So what's out of it, right? There's mathematical websites you can look at and say these are your chances of making the playoffs. And, of course, those can change a lot. Like, remember the Titans.
Because
they were 90% with, like, 3 weeks to go of making the playoffs. We know what that meant.
You can ascend or crash and burn both quickly.
Yes.
But it doesn't just depend on you. It depends on what the teams in front of you are doing.
With each passing game, that's a key thing, is you can't control what the other teams do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If the other you can't just rely on them to fall back, which is part of it, right? And so the less games you have, you still have 31 games. So we're talking about a third of a season. That's quite a bit of time for teams to rise and fall. But you have to make an honest assessment. Do you have enough offense? Can you score enough goals? That was a good question by Joe,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's, to me, the essential question for this team. Is I think the other pieces are fairly well there. I think you know what you got in Soros. You know you got Josi. You got a pretty good decor. Hopefully you get Carrier back pretty soon. He does have, a pretty definitive timetable. It won't be that much longer that he's out. But can you score? Can you score enough to win the amount of games? In my mind, I've been telling you guys the point. You need to get to about 97 points to feel good. So you got 31 games left. So you do the math. If you win about 18 of 31, and there are some overtime losses mixed in there, that's going to get you to 96, 97. That's going to put you, I think, where you need to be. So you got to make an honest assessment. What does this team look like? Can they win that many games out of 31? I mean, the answer is obviously anything's possible, right? But what's your realistic assessment of the team? And then at the trade deadline, if you're falling back, then what's the number where you're like, look, the math is this, the math isn't good, right? So we got to make moves accordingly.
If I was GM, honestly, the number of points back wouldn't matter to me.
Really?
Because my mind is made up.
Okay.
because I've seen what I needed to see from this team at where it stands. And also,
so even if they're even with Minnesota and Calgary by that time.
Because at that point, you would be right where you need to be to skate into the playoffs, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And that's just not enough for me anymore. Because where it would stand was you could get into the playoffs, and then you might be matched up with a team that's just that much better than you, and then it's a first-round exit. And I know.
And who would be that team?
Anything can happen in the playoffs. Maybe a Dallas, maybe a Seattle. I don't know what that would be. But I don't want to see
Seattle's an interesting one, right? Do we think Seattle is a juggernaut? I mean, they're a second-year franchise that's, to me, overachieved. You look at their talent. They've done great. But that's not a team that I would be shying away from having a chance to be. See, these are all questions to me. Like, Dallas, I think, is really good. Dallas is good.
And I don't want to see.
We also believe that Colorado is still the team to beat, provided that they get everybody back.
Another team I don't want to see in
the
playoffs.
That's who you don't want to play. But if you're a wild card, you're going to either play the winner of the Central or the winner of the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
If Seattle wins the Pacific, or really, pick a team. Edmonton, I don't see a team that is a huge favorite in the Pacific. Those are all good teams, but I don't see a juggernaut like last year's Colorado team. That team was the overwhelming favorite. And that's why I keep going back in the what if of what if they had played Calgary with UC Soros instead of playing Colorado without UC Soros. There's an enormous difference with that.
You could do that all day long.
So that's, again, your...
That's where
but,
I am
But
right
you
now.
You are in the belief that, look, no matter what, the best version of them is still not good enough in your mind.
From where it stands right now and from what I've seen, I have no reason to believe that this team is going to just figure it out and look like an offensive juggernaut and everything just clicks and all the pieces fit. That's just my assessment of where the team is right now. Because also, you're fighting to get in the playoffs. And just getting in the playoffs right now is not enough for me, because we've seen that from this team over the past couple of years. I want this team to be able to compete. I want this team to be a team that is able, that they're a favorite in the first round, they get into the second round, they are one of the favorites for a Stanley Cup, and I know every team wants to do that. But that team, from my assessment, from where it is right now, is pretty far from that. So it doesn't matter to me if what this team does in the next 8 games, and if they go 8-0, and I'll swallow my tongue, and if they, you know, if they all of the pieces fit together, then fine, I'll admit that I was wrong. But I've seen all I've needed to see from this team, and it's been the same all year long. You win a couple, you lose a few clunkers, you have a really bad game, you come back, you beat a good team, you look good for a couple of days, and then you lose a few. That's been the storyline all season long, and I have been given no reason to believe that anything is going to change.
Okay.
Well, here's the problem with both sides, because if they don't make any moves before the trade deadline and they figure, okay, we're in a good position and we can ride this thing out, and say they get that last playoff spot, well, they only get it because UC Soros is playing more games than not. I think that's a bad thing. Because now what you didn't want to do is ride UC into the playoffs. That's what you're going to have to do. And you might end up in the same situation that you were last year. Not to say he's going to get hurt, but you've worn him down.
Yeah,
because
that's what was interesting about last night.
In the second half.
Last night, I think, was a game that last year they would have played Soros. Mm-hmm. And that contributed, because they didn't have much confidence in the backup. It's tough because they're trying to do what you said, and that's keep Soros somewhat rested.
But they, it's almost
and they
like
played
they
Lankinen, and Lankinen was not. Lankinen has been awesome all year long. He wasn't awesome last night. He was not bad, but he didn't rise up and make it, and play as well as he's played. So that was tough. They tried to accomplish both, mm-hmm. and it backfired on him.
Because it's like you're saying, where are the goals coming from? Where are the goals coming
right.
from? Well, if we got Lincoln in the net, and Lincoln is not bad, but he's not UC Soros. If you're not getting any goals and your goalie is giving up goals, you're going to lose. Well, if you put Soros in there, then you have a higher chance of winning, but are you scoring the goals? Now you're putting so much pressure on him.
Which they've been doing all
exactly.
season long.
They lean on him. There's no question.
You're going to lean on him so much, and that's his job. He gets it. He understands. But to me, you got to find a way. If you're going to not do anything before the trade line, you got to find a way to, because I think this team can score when they're healthy. If the guys are doing, because they've shown it, They've shown they can do it. But it's going to have to be an assertive effort from them to not put so much pressure on UC Charlotte. Because even if you make the playoffs and UC is just being himself and he's just dominating and you're not scoring goals but you're winning games, I can't see him maintaining that level of play throughout the playoffs.
And he shouldn't have to be Superman exactly. every single night in order for this team to skate by and make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I stand. Is UC Soros can be Superman. Mm-hmm. He's shown it. He has been. And this team leans on him for it. But if he's not Superman, that's when you lose to one of the worst teams in the league. Because Kevin Lankinen is in there.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Tim Hasselbeck will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the offseason, his thoughts on the Super Bowl. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game.